It should give you. Yeah, just hit other. Yeah, hit other. Okay. Yep, you're fine. You good? All right, sure thing. Bye-bye. Jesus Christ. Oh, shit. Thank you. what? It's a real slow part.
Okay. About to get louder again.
Thank you.
Alrighty, and we're live! Woo! I've had several hot mic moments during pre-show, so sorry for that, guys. I had to refresh my screen at one point, and I didn't realize it kicked my mic back on, so that was fun. You know, it's a learning curve. It's a learning curve. How are you doing tonight, Monica?
Okay, I've unmuted, so right. You can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, doing very well. Thank you very much.
Well, right. Huntress is going to be on here in a second. I'm just setting her mic up real quick. So let me give her her headset real quick, and she'll be right here.
All right. All of a sudden, I thought, wow, she's taking on a very manly voice.
I mean, I'm like that. Hi, Spy.
Hey, how you doing? Let me go get Hunters, and she'll be right back.
All right.
Awesome. I'll mute up so y'all can go. Yeah. Oh.
All righty.
That sound was pretty staticky in my ear. Is that?
Are you out there?
Yeah. There you go.
Is she like an avatar?
No, she doesn't.
I think you just put these on.
It sounds exciting.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Are we on stream yet or no?
We are. We are on air.
Oh, well, hello, everyone. I took a long nap and suddenly realized, I'm supposed to be on stream. How's the sound? I have the audio engineer here for a minute, so let me know if we need to adjust anything.
It's a little echoey, but that's probably just the room.
It is. This room is a little empty.
A little loud. It's a live room.
I would say maybe dial the volume down just a touch.
Dial the volume down.
Getting a touch of static on the upper ranges there.
Okay.
It's a bit hot.
Oh, Kermie just jumped in the chat. He says maybe down like 10 decibels.
All right.
And he's a techie person. I'm not, so.
hold on. So, let me try to
while you're sorting that down. Out, Salty, is there a chat and on this particular screen?
Yes, there should be.
I don't see the button for it.
Huh. Let me put something in. See if it blips up with like a notification.
Oh wait, I do see it. Hang on, it's just in a different place than usual.
Yeah.
I do see it now. Looks like there should be three messages, but I don't see those messages.
Well, when you open the chat it'll have like stream and private. If you click on private.
Is this better?
That's better, yes.
I see it now.
Okay.
Still too loud? Maybe I'll go outside. That might help.
If you have headphones, it might help. Do you have?
I'm on headphones.
Okay. Awesome. So, all right. So tonight we've got, of course, Monica. Awesome. Amazing to see you as ever. Kathleen could not join us tonight. She had a previous commitment. We were going to try and reschedule it for a different Tuesday, but it just didn't work out. So sadly, we do not have Kathleen with us tonight.
Yeah.
But bonus, we got Huntress, which is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And our good friend and sister Teresa Walsh is going to be jumping on at some point. She's just running a little behind dealing with some stuff in real life tonight. So, but this is fun. I love all my streams, right? But like the ladies' stream in particular is like, I don't have a lot of girlfriends in real life. So you guys are kind of it.
Same here.
How is everyone doing? Monica, what's going on with you?
Yeah, no, I'm doing well. It's snowing right now. We're back into a little bit of snow. It's not staying too much on the ground. It's kind of gray out there. It's not yet really spring yet either. So but it was very pretty this morning. But we did have a power outage yesterday for about five and a half hours because the wind came in like just out of nowhere. Suddenly, boom. We got this big storm happening, and then sure enough, the power went out, and it took a number of hours to come back. So I'm glad that's not tonight, right now.
Uh, Now, obviously, Spy and Huntress, you guys have been busy getting into the new house.
Oh, wow. Yesterday, we were working setting up the music room, which, okay. Monica, you're going to have to come check out our music room and make some music with us. Yeah, and today we worked on our tech and didn't consider that the room was going to echo like that because it just has one little rug in there. Yeah, very live room. Yeah, but no, it's been fantastic. It's warm and beautiful here. And yeah, I've been thinking a lot about what we're going to talk about tonight, and I think it's going to be very interesting.
It's going to be fantastic. This is obviously this is my passion. Get you know the women getting involved and getting out there. So one of my big inspirations.
Oh, you muted yourself.
I muted myself.
You're muted.
I hear her.
How about now?
Huh? Maybe it's just me. Huntress, can you hear?
I can hear both of you.
Yeah, I was gonna say I can hear both of you. Huh.
That's I can't hear anything anymore. Maybe it's just at my end.
Maybe.
It must be.
Yeah, because I can hear Huntress. I can hear you.
Monica seems
you're back.
To be muted.
Okay,
back,
okay.
Back.
Oh, now she's back. Okay.
I have noticed just like streaming in general has been a little bit laggy lately, and I don't wonder if some of it is just – obviously there's – warfare shit going on all over, and is that clogging up the it's not really airwaves, but for lack of a better
well
term.
It's screwing everything else up, so I don't see why it shouldn't screw up our streaming as well.
Were you able to hear each other still and it was just me that was out of it?
Yeah.
Isn't that remarkable? I couldn't hear a thing. I could see your mouth moving.
So, yeah, it's kind of mixed results. I know we were having a lot of extreme buffering on one site, but not on the other. So I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, the chats are really good. They're so supportive, and they let me know when there's issues right
That's
away.
So we thank all those people who are.
Oh, my God. Salty Crew are the best.
Yeah, well, lucky we have Kermy in there, too.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You're breaking up. You're breaking up just a little bit on the mic there. It's a little.
It's crackly. Like it's a static. It's not a feed. It's not a feedback. It's a static or something. I don't know what that
I
is.
I wonder if I should switch to my phone because I'm staticky.
Are you staticky? Yeah, you might need to. Actually.
Yeah.
I would probably recommend that.
Hey, whatever. Okay. Whatever you got to do.
Okay.
So
let's. Let's try that. Or I can try another.
Yeah,
I can try another room.
It's weird. Sometimes just go into a different room works.
Yeah. let's try the bed.
It's actually really good right now.
Yeah, that wherever you're at now is good. Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm comfortable. I'm in bed.
Oh, nice.
this house is huge. And so awesome. I've got a lot of options.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Yeah.
So, well, you actually gave me a really great idea to kind of start us off tonight, my Lady Huntress. I was wondering now obviously I know yours, but if we want to go around and say who our ideal Natsok woman is, like from a historical perspective, like who to us kind of embodies the ideals of National Socialism, and the one that kind of resonates for us, like our own sort of personal ideal. So if you want to start us off, Huntress.
Well, if you want me to start, Diana Mosley is a big inspiration for me, actually. And she wasn't living in Germany. She was English, but she went to prison for her beliefs. And I think that she is kind of what we need now, because we're not living in a Reich, we're living in Weimar 2.0. Yeah. So what we need are women who can get us there. And women like her were, you know, she was affluent, but she was well-educated, very aristocratic, and had leadership qualities. Not maybe, you know, not like running for office or that sort of thing, but in social networking, in getting people in power, she had that kind of status that was helpful. And so, you know, and none of us are aristocrats, you know, I don't think we fit that bill, but we do need to attract those kind of women.
Yeah.
And so we need to make our movement welcoming to them.
Yes.
And show them where they could be helpful.
Right.
So, and also, of course, Leni Riefenstahl, because she was the movie maker, artistic. Yeah. But again, a kind of an upper class or wealthy woman. So there's a couple.
There you go. How about you, Miss Monica?
Gosh, I sort of stuck on the question, like who I'm in big admiration of. It's going to come to me. I hadn't really thought of that as being the question. I'm reading a book right now from a woman that I hadn't heard about until quite recently, actually. So I can't say this has been my hero for a long time because I didn't even know about her. But this is an incredible book. I'm only about a quarter way through so far. It's a big book. Die Frau im Dritten Reich, which it's written in German. And so I read German, I speak German, and I write in German, but it's a lot slower. So it's a big effort. I have always my dictionary beside me. And I have also my pencil beside me. I've been writing in the margins and stuff. And her name is Gertrude Scholz-Klink. Gertrude Scholz-Klink. And so she was the basically leader of the Frauenabteilung, the women's, how would you call it? I don't even know which lingo.
It was the Frauenschaft of the Women's League.
Yeah, the Women's League, I guess that's, and she was a fantastic organizer of all of that. And just, you know, from the big to then the different levels of organization, so that women in every walk of life and in every town and area and of Germany could be pulled in and involved in this. And what I've read so far, and like I say, I'm only a quarter way through, but it's just absolutely speaking to my heart, because it's about everything that is so opposite of the feminist movement, what the feminist movement has brought us, but it's so contrary to what people would think in their heads in our very indoctrinated state that we have been put into, to think that anybody who's promoting, you know, just women to be mothers or promoting women to be, you know, or teaching, you know, womanly skills and whatnot. Oh, that's really backwards, or that's going to be oppressive to women. Cause that's what we were taught with the whole rise of this feminist agenda, which it never sat well with me, any of the feminist agenda, but now I'm actually learning more formally, I guess you could say, what that was, who was behind it, what it does, what it did to us. And when I'm reading this, it is so refreshing to see what values were promoted with these women, this whole Women's League, and what they were teaching the women. And it was all about what women do. And you know, that is about family, and that is about the home. And actually, it is the most important job in the whole wide world. And when you think about it, women are the ones who are the keepers of your culture, your race, your traditions, really the keepers of it, because you're not only in educating the young, as in the children in the family, so that means passing on your songs, your traditions, and your customs, but you're also creating these little human beings that are, their value system, their morality, their ethics, they are going to become the future men and women. And so the men in their roles, that they are the builders, they are the creators of everything that we have in our world, right? Like, it's created by men. And so it's really, really good, this book. It's speaking to my heart. And that's or my introductory statement, I guess, about, you know, to answer your question. And I'm sure as we go along, I'll think about other women who have influenced me or that I admire or that I would aspire to, you know. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the beginning here.
Yeah.
I look forward to this discussion, actually. Yeah.
Gertrude is definitely my personal hero. I ask myself at least 8 times a day, what would Gertrude do?
Wow. So have you read this book? Like,
no, I have not. I've researched her and I've done, I did like a whole episode just about her very, very early on. She was one of my direct inspirations for streaming in general, because I don't have nearly the skill levels to do an actual magazine like the Frauenwarte, the Women's Watch magazine. But I'm like, I can talk. I'm good at talking. So let me do the stream thing. And that's how I kind of modeled my content on, you know, the kind of content they would have put in that magazine, in that publication. It just kind of grew from there. But that was the original inspiration.
Oh, I swear, wow.
That woman could have literally organized primordial chaos. I firmly believe that. She and her last husband, because I think she was married 2 or 3 times, between them, they had 11 children.
Yeah, she has a huge family. That's right. I mean, that's in the introduction or at the end or wherever it is that they talk about all her children. Wow.
I mean, so like having 11 children running that house, and I realized she would have had help. They would have had, you know, staff to help them. But, you know, managing and administrating all that and then putting herself out there and doing everything she did in terms of working for the good of the Reich, for the Volk, was just like.
Yes, it was. For the good of the Volk, the whole people, and recognizing, see, all these things that she's articulating so far and what I've read so far, it's like, the wisdom in this woman's writing is just phenomenal. Yeah. And then to put all that, and she wrote this many years later, I do believe, like she wrote it, you know, afterwards. So
I have to see if I can find a copy of that in English, because.
Okay. I was going to say to you, Maya, I need to reach out again to my friend Zach and ask him where this is at. But Zach Kidd, I don't know if you're familiar with him. I haven't talked to him in a while, but he told me that the Antelope Hill Publishing is working on a translation that they are doing the translation, and they asked me if I would do a foreword or something like that.
Okay.
I would write a foreword to the English copy. So I thought, well, I sure better read the original. and so that's why I then found a source to order this in German. And it's obviously a used book, or it's very old, because it's kind of peeling, and this is how it came. It came with a little bit of rough edges here. Hard cover. And like I say, in German, it takes me a little longer to read, but I am working my way through it, and I'm very inspired by it. So I'm just learning. But I want to know what it's about in English, and then, I mean, in German. And then when the English one gets done, of course, I'll buy that right away or order it right away, and I better get to work.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to, like, that's amazing. I'm going to be, like, keeping my eyes now on Antelope Hill, like, are you done yet?
Well, we should find out where it's at.
Yeah.
It's been months and months since I've talked about this with anybody, so.
But, yeah, so that was, yeah, I love Gertrude. I just love Gertrude.
Wonderful.
I would never, ever, ever presume to try and, like, fill her shoes, but if I could channel just, like, one iota of her energy, I would consider my life well lived.
Oh, wonderful. This is so sweet. This is so nice that I, you know, here I'm talking about this, and this is, like, your total heroine, I guess you could say. Yeah, that's
wonderful. Well, it's great for me, because I had not heard of her. I was unaware of her. So
you see, and I
learned something new.
She was the highest ranking woman in the Reich. She was often sometimes referred to, not officially, but unofficially, as the female Führer. She held the highest rank. She and Eleanor Bauer, Sister Pia, she did actually hold honorary rank in the Waffen-SS, actually, Sister Pia did. She held a comparable rank to general because she was a nurse and she was the only one Himmler trusted with the welfare of his SS officers. So,
okay.
I forget what the title was in German because I'm terrible. My ancestors weep in shame because I can't speak a lick of German. But
I lost you again. Oh, there you are.
There we go. Yeah, it's a little bit of glitching. It might be weather on my end because we've also been having a little bit of snow. And I'm like, really? It's March. Mother Nature.
It's April.
Oh, it's April. It is. See, even my brain's backwards.
1 week of April.
I think it's like 80 here.
Oh, Lord.
It's warm.
See, the heat sounds good. I can't do humidity, though. Humidity kills me. So tonight it's well, Huntress, this is the first time you're on, hopefully the first of many times to come, fingers crossed. We do this what I call whack-a-mole style, so this isn't really a formal panel. So, like, everybody feel free to jump in and talk, and imagine we're just sitting at the kitchen table having a cup of tea and talking. Kind of.
Okay.
I like the real laid-back. But I'm not going to go into specifics with what happened in the Sunday meetup that you were there, Monica, with Salamandrin.
Oh, you mean on March 22nd?
Yes, on March 22nd. But I want to kind of go based off of some of the points that we call them points that were kind of brought up, where he was saying things about, like, women don't even belong in schools being educated. Women don't belong in this field or that field.
Oh, that's insane.
And just kind of talk about this because he's not the first or the only one, even I personally have encountered, saying these kind of things. And I just feel like, you know, let's talk about that. Where is the line? Where do women belong and not belong? And I mean, we have to be willing to fight for ourselves as women. We can't just ask men to do it.
I was under the impression that I was the most sexist person in our circle. You know, I'm pretty hard on women particularly, but that's extreme. And that is not NatSoc at all. You know, National Socialism was composed as an economic system for a modern industrialized country, not for the 16th century. You know, and the role of women is just going to be, we're going to be doing things, working, basically. You know, yes, we need to be caretakers of our children, but all of us, we three, we're all older, you know. Our kids are grown, and you still have a lot of life left in you. What are you supposed to do? I like to crochet, but I can only do so much of that. I have an active mind and can contribute to our movement. It would be ridiculous to just, you know, put me in the kitchen, although I love cooking. But yeah, that's not anti-feminist. That's anti-reality.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, feminism.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
Monica was saying how feminism, she always rejected it. And I did also. I remember being a young, you know, grade school kid in the 70s. And they had, like, career programming, you know, that, oh, and they're saying, oh, well, now women can work and these are some different careers you might consider. And I was like, well, I don't want to do any of that. And I said, so, and you know, and that word can, that I could choose to do that, was in there. But then by the 80s, when I was graduating for high school, I was like, oh no, it's not a choice. You have to, and you have to become a drone in this economy. And that, I feel like it was a theft of something like my grandmother's generation had. They had the choice of, they could work if they chose to at a point in their life where they weren't tied to raising children. But now we've been shoved in this situation where you have to juggle that. both raising kids and working. And it just doesn't work very well is what we recognize now. So, but I don't see that that was the system in National Socialism at all, that, you know, Hitler wanted women to, he gave prizes to women for having children. And, but they also, if they were inclined, if they had the ability to do certain careers that were appropriate for women, they could do that. Okay. And they were certainly expected to be educated as if they, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, so, actually, I don't remember if it was you, Huntress, that said about Lenny. Another name that comes to mind, just thinking about the well-known NatSoc women, Hannah Reich.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
I know quite a lot about her.
She was awesome when I was studying her, and that's an interesting case for me, because to me that kind of perfectly encapsulates the cultural mindset of the Germans, National Socialism in particular, because they weren't saying, you're a woman, you can't fly a plane, period. They just said, hey, we don't want you going into combat. That's not good for women to go into combat, but you obviously have talent. So, hey, be a test pilot, free up the male pilots for going in. And it was like this perfect balance of power, the way it's always supposed to have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. Hannah Reich, I mean, when she first started to attend, you know, pilot school in near where she lived or wherever that was, I don't know. But she did kind of, I think I have to reread the book, but I read her book in the original German as well, her own book. Such a good read. Anyway, I think she did kind of dress up like a boy. She kind of had to disguise herself in the beginning because it wasn't really normal. That's all. It's not like it was forbidden, I don't think. It was just not normal. And anyway, she was just so good at it, and she was just so dedicated. It was her dream since she was little that she wanted to fly like a bird, you know, and she became so good at it. I mean, she practiced it in her sleep. She practiced the controls, the reaction, the responses to this and that and the other thing. She was practicing in her sleep pretty much, and she got so good at it, and she then, like you say, became test pilot. She was the first to fly a helicopter, I do believe, and did it in a enclosed stadium, I think. I mean, she did absolutely crazy things. She was test flying these sort of, what were they, bomber planes, whatever. It was just cheap test. And then she did have a couple of accidents. She was in the hospital for a while there. She got severely injured. And she also met Adolf Hitler several times. And it's beautiful how she writes about her encounters with Adolf Hitler. Like the first encounter, she was so amazed at how much he knew about her profession and about her. Like he was so interested in everything about what she was doing that she got the impression he studied aircraft and piloting for years before he met her. And yet this is how he was. He would just be so interested in who he was talking to and addressing them and going like into their subject and show like so genuinely interested. And she was very, very impressed by, you know, meeting him and the conversation they had. And just while I'm on the topic of talking about her, she was in the in Berlin there, what do they call the quarters?
The bunker.
At the near, almost to the very last day she was in there, she had offered to fly him out, and he was, no way, I'm not doing that. But she could have, of all people, flown him out. She was so good. Because, I mean, the Soviets were coming, they were bombing. It was very, very dangerous, a very, very dangerous deep for her to even get in there and then to get out. Like, it was just absolutely, very, very dangerous and risky. And but he chose to stay. And but the description that she makes of him in those final days that she was in the bunker there were that he was almost like he had one foot already in the next world. He was basically a shell of his self, of himself. So he had spent his life force he had spent it. It's like for he was almost gone already. So this is to just set it straight. All those people out there who buy into that story of he escaped to Argentina. There is no way on earth that I believe that story, that he escaped to Argentina and then lived another couple of decades or whatever. Yeah. And that, I think that is being pushed hard, especially recently. I think it's pushed harder than it was for a number of years. I know that story's been around for a long time, but it's really gotten some traction in recent times. And I think it's because Adolf Hitler and the love of Otto, he's making a comeback in the world in general, mm-hmm. because people are starting to figure it out that he's not the baddest man that walked the face of this earth. He's the best man that walked the face of this earth in a long, 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 long time. And so for him to be making a comeback among the people, we have to squelch him down again. Yeah. What better way to knock him down again than to make him a coward and a traitor to his people? Because if he really did escape, don't you think that makes him a coward and a traitor?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, he was in poor health, which also should be an inspiration to all of us, mm-hmm. that here was this man who could have probably just, you know, lived a simple life and dealt with his aches and pains and not done anything. But that isn't what he did. He gave everything he had left in life to the Reich.
Yes.
And the Argentina story is just ridiculous.
I've gotten in arguments over that one, and I'm like, no, this is a hill I will die on. He did not. He would not have. Never. Not in a million years. Like,
it's Hollywood bullcrap. That's what it is. It's from the Jews. It's not. Yeah. It's not based in reality. It's based in Jewish imagination.
Yeah. And so that story about Hannah, how she writes about him in those last days, that would be a physical impossibility then anyway for him to live another 2 days. She said he was already halfway, 1 foot through the door already of the other, you know, the next life or whatever, mm-hmm. however you want to say it. He was half dead already. Like he wasn't going to live much longer. And indeed he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and like Hunter said, his health was not great and it hadn't been for a long time. You know, how much of him living as long as he did was him literally hanging on to life by his fingernails.
And his spirit, spirit was strong, and his love of his country, his folk, his people, and then this mission that the work that his life's work. But at that point, he had spent it. Right. So that's mm-hmm. kind of how she described it. He had spent it, his mm-hmm. life force.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's one of those topics where, like I said, I've gotten in arguments and I always will. Like, you're never going to convince me otherwise. There's just too much evidence to the contrary, just based on his own personality. Yeah. Let me say hi to our chats real quick. Sorry, go ahead, Huntress.
Oh, I just wanted to mention another woman that people don't often think of is Coco Chanel. She was a very strong supporter of Hitler and was happy when France, or what was it, Vichy France, when it was the portion of France that was ruled by Germany. And she also tried to do some organization on his behalf. So,
there's actually a lot of
was a businesswoman, you know.
Oh yeah, she was an interesting character. It was harder when I was researching her because, like, sometimes finding sources that aren't like Wikipedia, which is just mostly Jewish baloney.
Right.
You gotta read between the lines. It can get a little tricky sometimes, not getting completely slanted.
Well, and her company has lived beyond her, and so the people who run Chanel now don't want that association. And she got ripped off badly after the war. You know, like my favorite perfume, Chanel No. 5, she never made a dime off of that. It was like a couple of Jews who made that perfume and used her name. And she sued them, you know, was in court with them for years over the use of her name. But anyhow, there we go.
See, I didn't know about her. I don't know anything about her. So thank you for bringing her into the.
Yeah, she's the French fashion designer.
Yep.
It's interesting how many of the, you know, sort of artistic people of the time mm-hmm. were loved Hitler.
Yes.
You know, it certainly is. Well, when the other option is communism, which is anti-art and just destruction of everything beautiful, of course, National Socialism is the perfect opposite.
Yeah. She was an interesting character. She was a firecracker.
Yeah. Perhaps her moral character wasn't what we want to follow, but that's something else.
She was known for having a string of long-term affairs, basically. Mm-hmm. But you know, that was what made it difficult to research. Like, how much of that is true and how much of that is Jewish propaganda? It's one of those
right.
things. It's never going to be fully clear unless we can find like some hidden diaries. You know, Coco's there like, dear diary, today I turned down this guy who won't leave me. You're just not going to know, unfortunately. Just got word. Uncle Steve popped in the chat. Tessa was going to try and join us tonight, but she's taking care of her mom tonight and will not be able to join us. So we hope mom's doing okay and pray for swift recovery.
Yeah, sorry to hear that she's not joining us.
Yeah. Also, prayers for Fashbird, who is also not joining us.
I was going to ask about her and if she's not.
Yeah, she's feeling a little under the weather. She's got some stuff going on, so you know she should be shipshape by next week. But she was going to try and do the show last night or maybe tonight, and I'm like, honey, just take the time off. Like, you run, we all run hard. When you need to take time, just take time.
Yeah.
One of my favorite phrases that I always try to remind myself of is, you cannot pour from an empty cup. So like, we're trying to do something. Right. We're trying to spread the word, spread ideology, and just share with our folk. Well, we're a finite resource too. We occasionally have to pause, you know?
I like that saying, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Yeah.
Good.
And it's, I mean, I find that hard. I don't know about you ladies, but like, that's one thing I've always found hard to do, is just turn off and say, no, I can't right now, because I just want to keep giving, keep doing. I don't know if that's unique to us as women, or if that's just unique to us as Aryans. I don't know. Guys in the chat, maybe you can let me know.
You know, back to what you're saying earlier, but carry on with the chat if you just jump in. But if I can jump in, because you had asked about how we like the women. Oh, I know it came from that, you know, that guy there who thinks that women should not be educated at all or all that stuff. But anyway, and I know I've learned quite a few things in this last year, because there's another fellow that I was actually in correspondence with for a while. And he's in I'd never heard of this movement of MGTOW.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. Anyway, it's really awful, but there's a lot of hatred of women, and so mm-hmm. I've done a lot of thinking about all that. And okay, these people who are very disgusted, that is, there's some justification for the disgust, but it's not like they got to look at the root of what got us to where we are. Like, there is a lot of very poor behavior on the behalf of women these days, that they're mm-hmm. there. And there's also a lot of injustices that are happening. And so there's this counter reaction to it. But back to this notion about women shouldn't get educated. They shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that. Like, let's talk about how it was in National Socialist Germany. Like mm-hmm. the encouragement for family life and the positive influences that would steer women to have children and be at home, and they, you know, that was just a clear expectation that if you have a family, the mother is going to raise those children and be at home and make a home, and the positive influences to that basically achieved that state of being, that there were bigger families, And it was the norm that women would be home in the home. They would be raising those children. And it was the norm when I was growing up still. I was kind of a lucky last generation where that was the norm. Yeah. My mother was home raising us, and all my friends' mothers were home raising them. It changed very quickly after that. Very, very quickly. I was alarmed by that. I thought, wow, this is really weird. Women are all going out into the workforce and they're putting their children into daycare. This is really weird. Like, it didn't sit well with me. But anyway, so if you have these positive forces for women to, you know, have children, have more children, and that this is the expectation, and that you revere women for that job, not to be diminishing it, which is right. What happened with the feminist movement. First, there's all kinds of messaging, and it's so subliminal. It's so kind of, it creeps in softly in the culture that, oh, what, you're just a housewife? Like this question, what do you do for a living? Uh-huh. If you were staying home and raising, oh, it's like it was diminished in value. It was like, oh,
right.
And you're enslaved. Yes. That was the other notion. And it came about through movies. It came about through television shows, this notion that the men are enslaving you, they're oppressing you and keeping you shackled in the home. So, and also on the flip side, they would school us that girls, you can do anything you set your heart to. You can do anything you want to do because you're just as good as boys. Well, nobody before that was doubting that we might be just as good, but there was a different value, set of values was put onto what is it that women do and the roles of women and men. And so then they're instilling in women, into girls, this notion that, well, I don't want to just be at home. I can do anything I set my little heart to or my little mind to. So of course I'm just as good and just as smart. So I am going to take that career and get that career, and I am going to do that. And if I was just at home, and you're not going to shackle me in the home. And then what do? They all go home and get shackled in an office and they're enslaved by the corporate boss, right? So it's about a value system. And you don't have to bar women from getting an education. No. You don't have to do that. Like that's craziness. There are always going to be, you know, there's a huge range of different talents and personalities, and some women aren't going to be the ones that are going to get married, have kids. And like you said, Huntress, what do we do when we're older? And, you know, but the best years of your life being spent in the career path, and then deciding, oh, gee, I want to have kids, or maybe it's too late, I'm not fertile anymore. And then you get old and you don't have children. And it's like, geez, that was dumb. And then, you know, crying in your empty nest.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and waiting to have children is not good. I wasn't able to have kids until I was 36, part for economic reasons and part health reasons and stuff like that. And I regretted it so much that I wished I had had them at least 10 years younger, because your energy level, even in your 30s, starts going down. You know, and dealing with twins in my 40s was pretty heavy.
Oh, wow.
I would have been a lot better mother if I had just been younger. Yeah. And the age difference between you and your children is so vast, too, that it's hard to relate to the world that they are living in. You don't understand it as well as you would have if you were closer in their age. So, yeah, no, waiting is a bad, bad idea. Have your kids when you're like,
yeah, if at all possible, have them early.
Yeah.
And you're likely to have less children if you wait until you're
30. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had the twins and I was done. You know, that was it.
And where did that come from? You know, like there was that guy, Paul Ehrlich. Do you remember Paul Ehrlich? And he wore a little hat and a Jew. Who wrote that book in, I think, late 1960s, The Population Bomb. And they scared the bejesus out of us in school about population explosion and all that. And so, okay, so out of conscientiousness, my generation, I have some friends, they had no children. I have one. You know, and I waited till I was in my 30s, and I thought the same thing. Boy, this would have been easier 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
You know, if I'd been 10 years younger. Anyway, so the population bomb, that whole narrative, boy, oh boy, did they ever hammer that during the 70s and 80s, how we have
too many. The population.
We are conscientious. And then what do? Gaslighting us a decade later after that. Oh, we need more workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Let's open the borders. Let's open the floodgates. First, it starts with temporary foreign workers. And then, oh, we better let them bring their grandmas and grandpas in, because this is cruel and unusual, you know, if we don't let mm-hmm. them bring their families in, and then, you know, bring their spouses, bring their children, bring everybody, bring the whole kit and caboodle. And now they're permanent. And then just open the floodgates. Right.
Right. No. And feminism was very instrumental in pushing that whole thing. And it was such a lie that it was liberating, because basically what you were being told is that, hey, lady, if you're not doing a man's job, you're worthless.
Yes.
Right?
Hey.
Good point.
Hang on one second, guys. We got. There she is. There's Tessa. You made it.
Hey.
Hey, how's. Right. Oh, you're good. How's mom doing?
Mom is confused.
Okay.
But we do this thing where we write sentences to remind her. Okay. You're in the hospital. Today is Tuesday. Teresa lives in Fuquay with Steven and dot, 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 these kind of things. So anyway, good to be here. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, nope, you're fine. We're just happy to have you.
Thank you.
So we also have Monica. Monica, this is our good friend and sister Tessa, Teresa Walsh. You've probably seen her husband, Uncle Steve Empire, in the different chats.
Is that – did you say UK Steve? Is that
– No, 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 no.
No, no.
Uncle Steve.
Uncle Steve.
Yeah, he's in a lot of the chats. He's in our FTD chat right now, actually.
I can relate to Tessa because we both live with musicians.
Same. Guilty.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I don't play an instrument. Yeah. Arian Eagle plays an instrument. I play the radio.
Nice.
Right.
So, but yeah, good to have you here.
Thank you.
And of course, you know, Huntress, I feel like I need to do introductions. Huntress, this is Tessa. Tessa, this is Huntress. Monica, Tessa. Tessa, Monica.
Good to be here.
So good to meet you. So good to meet you.
You as well, ma'am. Thank you.
So yeah, we're just talking. We're just a bunch of base ladies sitting around a digital kitchen table with tea, talking. It's awesome. It's based. There you go.
Well, okay, nice.
I have my can of fizzy water, but. always.
I'm on coffee.
There you go. I can't have coffee at this point in the day because I have to be up by 4 a.m. So I won't sleep if I drink coffee at this point.
I had 2 hours of sleep.
Oh man!
I want to get to rest after this.
So yeah, we were just talking about this whole bullshit mentality of women shouldn't be educated and feminism and the lies and what it's done to us. But we did sort of an icebreaker round, and we were asking about everybody's sort of model woman in terms of National Socialism or just traditional values. So do you have anyone that kind of is your ideal for that?
Modern or
could be modern, could be historical.
Yeah. I think of John Adams' wife.
Okay.
And for the past, and I think of Monica Schaefer for the current.
Aww. Yes, so exactly.
I remember I heard an interview the first time I listened to FTJ, and I think Uncle Steve was streaming, and Monica Schaefer was talking about, I don't even believe women should vote anymore. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
My grandmother had a saying. She said, the man, the head rules. They're the head of the family, and the woman is the heart of the family. And they were immigrants from Italy. So I'm in complete agreement with that. So those are my two And my mother as well, but I
nice.
And then you think about the importance of the heart and how, you know, that's in the family and whatnot. We've been talking about family and folk.
And they
but they can you tell us
each other.
Can you tell us more about you said John Adams' wife?
Yeah. She was very supportive of him. That's the first Adams. I really like the two, the John Quincy and John Adams. And I know I read some, you know, hidden history or, you know, lied about history that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, they died on the same day and they were friends. I'm doing more deep diving into that, you know, with the history, the American history. So. But I know that she was, what was her name? Abigail. And she was very supportive of her husband, but she was still not, you know, kowtowing to him, you know, because you're two parts of a whole, right? And non-kosher salt, you and I have spoken about the chalice and the blade.
Yes.
And it's this.
Yes.
And how important it is. And speaking about the heart and the brain, there and the gut. So these are all the organs or the systems that have neurons in them and they connect. So.
Yeah. Very nice. I like what you just said about, you know, supportive of him and, but understanding that you're a team. And, you know, something just popped into my head too, to say about this thing about women's roles and men's roles being really quite different. So my parents came over to Canada to go up north and be amongst the Eskimos, and something that my father had said many times around the dinner table later in life is, so the men and the women would have such completely different roles, and in living in the harsh environment of the far north, that those roles were both absolutely critical to not just, you know, happiness and la la la, but to their survival. So the women, their role was, you know, to make proper clothing, like to chew like they'd be chewing the leather to make it soft and sewing it up to make the parkas and whatnot and the moccasins. And if she didn't do good clothing, then the hunter, her husband, was not going to survive. And conversely, the hunter, if he wasn't a good hunter, they were going to starve and they weren't going to survive. And so each had critical roles, but they were completely complementary and they were different roles. And each valued the other. Mm-hmm. And each did not interfere in the other. You know, the man, the hunter in the home wouldn't start telling his wife how to sew up that moccasin, and she wouldn't go tell him how to hunt. And they revered and respected each other in their role, in their domain. They were the mm-hmm. the king of their domain or the queen of her domain. And they each, so nobody was superior to the other, but they needed each other and they were complementary. And that's the kind of like a real good example of the role of man and the role of woman. They are complementary to each other. And they are different roles. And boy, oh boy, that's something that the feminist agenda, the Jews were, they did a number on us by, you know, hammering this feminist agenda where it's like setting up a big competition between men and women. And now what's the culmination of it? We talked about it a few minutes ago. This was before you joined us, Teresa. We were talking about this horrible thing that has culminated in the MGTOW movement. Have you ever heard of that? MGTOW, it stands for Men Going Their Own Way. I just learned about it a few months ago. I never knew such a thing existed, but it's like, it's
let me write that down.
Oh, I've run into a few of them online and they are some really messed up guys.
Yeah. I mean, you almost want to feel bad for them because, you know, we understand they've been attacked and brainwashed, but I'm also like, okay, fellas, it's 2026. You're a big boy. You've obviously at least found your way to the fringes of this movement. Get your act together. That's why I always say, you know, huge, and just pause for a moment here. I want to shout out every single gentleman, and I use that word very specifically. Yes. In both of our chats tonight on FTJ on 88, they have been just the epitome of true Aryan gentlemen in my entire streaming experience. Like, big O slash to you. You guys, you've been fantastic. Just know, we appreciate you. Mm-hmm. Because, believe me, we've all run into the not gentleman type.
Yes.
And it's bad. It's really bad. I got to put my two cents in on the whole voting thing. First of all, welcome to America. The rules are made up and the votes don't matter. It's pointless. It's stupid. Nobody should be voting anyway. It's a broken Jewish system from the gate. So, like, voting.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why I kind of get sick of the whole, like, women should or shouldn't vote issue. I'm like, nobody should be. It kind of solves that problem. I'm all for efficient solutions, you know. You know, if we do have to have a voting system, I do actually tend to lean a little bit more towards one vote per household. Because what happens if, say, for something tragic happens and a husband dies, and now the wife is left as a widow to care for her family, her children, and represent her household? Mm-hmm. I don't feel like all participation should be taken away. If there is
That's a sensible solution. That makes sense to me.
I agree. Makes sense.
Shlomo 88 and I were actually talking about that one time. And he's the one who said about, hey, have you thought about like one per household? I'm like, I like this idea because, again, it makes the husband and wife, the man and the woman in the equation, actually talk, work together, make sure. And this is why it's important. What was the saying way back in the day? When a young man went calling or courting a young lady, he should agree with her father on politics and her mother on religion. It's a kind of an extension of that. It makes sure that you are aligned with your partner, that you have open communication, and you come to an agreement which keeps the family unit healthier. And of course, a healthy family unit is the very building block for a healthy society. So just my two cents.
That's excellent. And it harkens back to when only property owners could vote. I mean, you know, when people think about the suffragette movement, they just think they don't know much about it. And I'm sort of just embarking on getting an education about it myself. But it wasn't just women wanting the vote. It was a lot of men wanted the vote, but they weren't property owners. Like, there were very few people who had the vote.
Most of the men that went and died in World War I could not vote.
Yeah.
That's like, most men didn't even have the ability to vote until women also got the right to vote. But there were also a lot of states where women had the right to vote even before that. So it's this misdirection, this classic Jewish misdirection. Yeah. We're going to make a big stink and a hoo-ha about this one thing, so you don't actually look at what the reality is. So, yeah, so I get a little heated about the topic. So
I published on my website a little while back on freespeechmonica.com. I published an article that is basically a reprint of a woman who wrote this article in 1917. So that's over 100 years ago. And she was writing an essay against women getting the vote. And if people want to check that out, go to my freespeechmonica.com with a K, and it's a few articles back. You'll find it easily. And I just found that article so interesting. What arguments would there be against women having the vote? Because at first glance, you just think, well, what do you mean? Yeah. Why is that good for women not to have the vote? And you read that article, and it's like, this makes so much sense. Everything she's saying in it. Oh my goodness. And
it was prophetic, huh?
Yeah.
Prophetic. Prophetic is right.
And it does make sense. The one thing that kind of concerns me is, okay, so yeah, there's a lot of really, really poor examples of women out there voting or even in political office.
Yes.
Show me any men that are better.
Right. Yeah.
Like, is it really a gender issue?
They're all playing the same game. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, okay. So yeah, like, you know, we talk about all these liberal women in political office. Okay. show me the men that are better, that are in office.
Well, what has happened is that men in whatever institution, whether it's in the political sphere or other institutions, boards of corporations or universities or what, you know, in the justice system or whatever, the men have to now change their own standards or their own things that they're pushing for, because otherwise they're going to be absolutely attacked by the women's issues or the women, yep, the things they're pushing. And they're not it's not in support of our people.
Right.
So women will tend, okay, we have the nurture, the heart, and this goes right back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, okay, there's the head and then there's the heart. Because we're geared that way because we were the nurturer of the family. Now, you put us outside of the home and now we're going to nurture all the migrants and the poor refugees. Yep. We're going to have a different value system that pull us in a different direction. And we're also, in general, much more manipulatable by those messages. And if you have this invisible or camouflage or the enemy amongst us, not the enemy inside emotion. The gate, which is the Jews, if you have that, they are manipulating us to the hilt. And if we're in homogeneous societies, well, then there'd be another argument against having women be involved in the political sphere anyway, because why can't men work on behalf of the whole family, right? And women are doing these other roles. But now it gets even more complex when you don't have the homogeneous society and then you're infiltrated by an enemy that is deceptive and, deceives you into... And lying to us about making us feel guilty about everything. And women tend to be affected by that guilt cult more than men. Yes. Men go on logic and we got to get something done. Let's go build this. Let's go get this done.
Yeah.
Women are affected by this guilt cult. And then, you know, in general, we have the empathy. I'm not saying there's a difference between men and women with empathy. Men have empathy too. But for some reason, you combine this guilt cult and now the empathy. Well, we want to take care of everybody else. And the women go and volunteer in all these, you know, refugee centers to take care of all these poor, poor migrants. And it just, this is a disaster for collective suicide.
Kermit,
I lost you.
Are you still there? Can you hear me? Okay. I think we're good. Monica may have dropped the sound, but I think I'm okay otherwise. No, and I don't want to, like, by my statement, I don't want anybody to think like I'm saying, you know, women should be in charge and not men. Absolutely not. And I also agree, women do not belong in political positions. All I really mean by that is, unfortunately, the men we have in these positions right now are the worst examples. And that is intentional, in my opinion, because it's just another point that the Jew can come in then and see, well, see, ladies, you got to just step up and take care of it like a boss babe, and spinning more of that bullshit that women can do anything. Yeah, you know what? Women can do just about anything they want to, but we shouldn't have to do everything. That was never the design. Just like men should not have to be doing everything. Monica said it earlier. We each have our domains. And we need to be taking care of them. I'm talking myself in circles now, getting frustrated.
Well, back to Monica's talking about MGTOW, is what I noticed with them is that the examples of women that they hated, which I can agree with them on, were like TikTok girls who were just on there being sluts, right?
Yeah, the e-girls.
However, I've been on TikTok a lot the last few months because I didn't have my Gab login and I won't explain it. But anyhow, so I've been on there just kind of innocently looking for crochet videos, and I was suddenly being fed Nat Sock women short videos. And it was amazing that the algorithm was working that way, that I just got more and more and more. And there's a lot of women on TikTok doing fabulous work. And women, because we do tend to be more emotional and empathetic, it works. They're good at doing that short format thing that is, it hits the heart rather than logic, you know. Yeah. Yes, we need logic in charge, but if we have that emotional pull, girls use it, you know, it works. And it's a way to show these guys that there are good women out there.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. I just want to pause real quick. Monica had to drop out and come back in. Her audio was not working again. So she's going to come back in. Just so everybody knows, she didn't just disappear. She's coming back. I promise.
The thing about may I?
Mm-hmm, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
The really screwed up part of the vile kike is that they severed the heart-brain connection. And it was so important. You can't just have the one or the other. They have to work together for us to be beautiful humans, men and women, uh-huh. living men and women. And I mean, I could speak about what they're doing to men, but let me speak about what they're doing to women. The attacking our empathy, mm-hmm. they turned us, and I was one of them, they turned us into these bleeding heart jerks, mm-hmm. bleeding heart jerks. And Monica and I don't know if you mentioned it as well, Huntress, is, you know, with these immigrants. I think it's even worse what they did with these non-binary baloney growers. Oh my God. I know so many women that all of a sudden their little gay daughter, their poor daughter, she's gay. Mm-hmm. She's not a man. She's gay. Just let her be gay. She's a lesbian. Okay? The same mm-hmm. with your son. He's just gay. Why you gotta let him cut off his parts and take drugs, pharmaceuticals, and all this stuff? And they called me a hater and a racist for saying that. You're a white supremacist. I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, yeah. At the time, we're talking about 2015. So anyway.
One of the big things they make this claim about the Nazis is that they were doing medical experiments on people. And I'm sorry, that's what cutting off parts and giving hormones to kids is. It's experimental. And actually, Hitler shut that down in Germany, you know, and use your empathy in that you need to care about these kids being abused by an insane medical system,
yep.
you know, by Jews. That's what's happening to them. So they're being experimented on by Jewish doctors. It's horrible. It doesn't make sense. I can understand that maybe our kids do have hormone imbalances. For one thing, we expose them to plastics at an insane rate. You know, a baby's world is plastic. And we know that those react with our hormones. And so, you know, it's quite possible that they really do have hormone imbalances. But then treat them to make a male male and a female female. Don't go with the plastic.
And don't cut their parts off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've actually gone straight up no contact with immediate family over this issue. Mm-hmm. They have a friend whose child is, oh, they're trans. And I'm like, no, they're not. What are mom and dad and like blah 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 and well how can you say that I'm abusive because I don't want this child to have any bits chopped off, so I went, you know what, bye. Mm-hmm. Like I just can't stand
yeah
that. That's such an example of inversion, like so many other things in our world that has been so inverted, that the person who is actually defending the young child trying to protect them from these crazy abuses and mutilations and sterilization, in effect, mm-hmm. that you are the one who is the abuser and the violent one and the criminal. And I mean, people have been criminalized actually for trying to protect children from these abuses.
Yeah. And it's usually the white men that are protecting their daughters and their sons, and they're the creeps, right? Mm-hmm. Sarcasm here, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Yeah. It's usually white men who are criminalized. They actually go to jail for trying to protect their sons or daughters.
Yeah. Like, my dad was never one of those that was, like, super involved. But the one thing I will give the man is I think he was smart enough to kind of see how things were going in society. And he made damn sure I learned how to at least protect myself. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what? I used to have arguments with my dad. There's so many things. Actually, Alfred and I once did a show on the things that we used to disagree with our parents, and that we now would agree with them totally, but they're both gone. So that was the theme of a talk that we did, like all the things that we used to fight with our parents. But one of them, I used to argue with my dad about homosexuality, because at that time it was just starting, like when I was maybe a teenager or a young adult, and we were having these philosophical discussions about all this around the dinner table. And I thought, well, just live and let live, love and let love, live and let live, kind of along those lines. I thought, what's the harm of these people who want to be gay, whatever, you know, homosexuals? Boy, was he right. And I have a little thing here on my board here. It's, they start with a plea for tolerance. So that would have been at the time a plea for tolerance. Look, we're not hurting anybody. Just tolerate us. Don't beat us up. You know, be nice. Then comes the plea for acceptance. It's a step up a little bit. Then comes the plea for normalization. Oh, yeah, it's like certain percentage of the population, they can't help it. That's the way they're born and blah, 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 blah. Then the demand for compliance. And then the fifth stage is total conquest. Where are we at right now in this? When they criminalize people for you know, maybe protesting against making a rainbow sidewalk or criminalize or go against a business that refuses to put the little sticker in their window there beside their door, that the flag, you know, the rainbow flag, they'll criminalize and demonize people who kind of just go against that. Well, that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like Monica, I was pro-gay when I was younger because I grew up with some gay boys. I'd known them since, you know, I was 4 or 5 years old, and I was always protective of them. I didn't want the other boys to beat those boys up and stuff. Well, then they all started dying of AIDS. They all got AIDS. And I was like, geez, maybe they should have been beat up when they were young to save their own lives.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. Save their own lives.
Yeah.
I remember when I was younger, so this is, you're talking high school age, late 90s, and just over the millennium. And, you know, the gay thing was like really being pushed into the normalize it stage of that process. And, you know, being young and wanting to not be ostracized from whatever
peers
you have, you at least kind of sometimes you just smile and nod along. And I was always like, what you do in the privacy of your own home, I don't care. That was kind of my line. That was my way of splitting hairs.
For sure.
But, you know, that went away very quickly for me. I actually had a boy I went to school with who was an absolute bully tell me I was the reason he was gay. And that was like, nope, that's it. I'm done. I caught on, like, this is a weapon. I didn't have the shape to that thought at that age, but it stuck with me for a long time. And it's like, you know, years later, learning about the Jew and everything they do and how it's tied in with this sexual perversion they like to push. I'm like, oh, okay, makes sense. I was right at 16 years old. This is a weapon.
His logic? Did he have any logic for you or the reason for him being gay? I don't get it.
I was just such a horrible girl, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, because he didn't like you as a human being, so all girls are bad, and so I prefer a boy.
I guess.
Oh, probably because she refused to date him.
Well, no, actually, exact words
I think it's
were,
hilarious.
I was going to ask you out in ninth grade, but, you know, you're the reason I became gay because you're just so horrible. And I'm
oh,
like,
my God. So he's blaming, maybe he's feeling rejected by, and he's going to blame you for it. Wow.
And it's like, you never even asked me, so I couldn't have rejected you. I think he was really just trying to hurt everybody he could hurt. But the fact yeah. that even at that age, the sickness was so deep in him that he was actively weaponizing it. Yeah. That one, it was so much more toxic than anybody knew even at the time, you know?
Do you know what another argument was that they used to manipulate us into this? Because I had a dear friend in Jasper when I was still there who one of her grandchildren came out as a tranny, and this friend of mine, she was kind of saying how he was telling me about it, and I was kind of like, oh, that's too bad. And then she said, well, I'm so glad for her that we're so accepting of all this, or him or her, I can't remember now, whatever it was, the it. And she was just really happy that we live in these times where this child would be accepted and loved for who it was. And I'm trying to tell her that this was not normal and this was not good. And this was before, this is a number of years before I kind of started to have more that I could articulate better about what was wrong with it. So I wasn't really able to make some good statements to her about what was wrong with it. I just felt it was sad. But her argument was that in the past, because I thought, well, there's so much of this now. This didn't used to be. This wasn't like this. And she said the reason it wasn't, there weren't the so many in the past is because they were discriminated against. So they couldn't be themselves. They couldn't. So this is another lie that's been told to us. It's another lie that, oh, all these trannies used to exist, but they just couldn't express themselves. Like now, at least we're allowing them to be in the right body, and they used to be in the wrong body, and then they were just discriminated against, and they're all unhappy, and they nothing could be further from the truth. And oh then God. When they talk about suicides, that's how they frighten parents actually into going along with the children misdirected in the schools by some counselor telling them, oh, you're in the wrong body, and then they tell them, well, keep your secret, don't worry. And if parents go against that, well, parents are scared into believing that the child, if you don't go along with your child, the child's going to commit suicide. And guess what? It's exactly the opposite. You know what the suicide,
right.
yes.
What the suicide rate is amongst transitioned children? I mean, I guess it's through the roof.
It's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
Well, you know, I can believe that there is a brain type that becomes gay, that people aren't like necessarily, you know, that, oh, they were all molested when they were kids or something like that. No, I've known kids, like I said, since 4 or 5 years old. They were always different. But what has happened to them is that the Jews have sexualized that brain difference and defined it as homosexual mm-hmm. when maybe it isn't not necessarily that way. They might be different, you know, but there's something out of the norm, but it doesn't need to be expressed so sexually and so perverted. You yeah. know, that they are, what I've seen with gays is that they're extremely promiscuous.
Yes.
You know, and I was even like taken in by the gay marriage thing. I thought, well, maybe if they could just get married and, you know, have an accepted life somewhat within the mainstream, they'd be better. But no, they're still very promiscuous even when they're married. I mean, that might not be true of all of them, but what I've seen it is. And so this is a huge, we're not dealing with that brain difference in a caring way at all.
You make such a good point that the Jews, they took that whatever it is, that they're a little bit different from the norm, whatever that is, that they sexualized it and made it into mm-hmm. something that it didn't need to be that. That doesn't need to be that. Like, you're absolutely right. That was a very, very good point. And by the way, I also used to be totally taken in by the gay marriage. Like, sure, what does it hurt? They don't, not hurting anybody.
That's the tricky bit. That's always the dangerous bit. My question is about, because I do agree 100% about the brain difference, but what causes the brain difference?
Yes.
Is it naturally occurring?
I don't know.
Or
I don't know if it's nature or nurture. Yeah. I don't know. But I don't think that there's been an honest attempt to try to understand it.
Oh,
it's just been used politically and culturally to just make us insane.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that how we ended up here, we shouldn't feel bad that we were taken in by that stuff. We didn't know any better, right? But we are the people who say, oh, look at it. You told me this 20 years ago, and I went along with it. But now we've done the experiment, and the results are horrible. We need to change course.
Yeah. I don't see that happening.
Is it just in my ears that, just when you're talking,
you're a little crackly. Yeah.
Quite crackly, so something changed here in the last little while, or maybe it was crackly before too, but
I tend to pace, and so I'm going through rooms. I'll try to sit still.
Oh my God. I totally am with you there. You should see me talking on the phone. I'm like, the one night talking with somebody, I think I clocked like over 2 miles just pacing my kitchen.
But I'll just say something that I'm not a techie at all, but I've learned the hard way too. When I had a guest once on a show and somebody else told me that they were too close to the microphone or to the mouthpiece or wherever. I don't know if that might be it.
Well, the problem is we don't have our office set up.
You're better
yet.
Now.
Okay, I'm back on the bed. And, you know, we will hopefully by next time have all of that sorted out. I'll even go on camera, but the camera is in a bin somewhere in the back room in the basement. I don't know.
Cameras are always optional. That's one rule. Like everybody's got a different comfort level with being on a stream. So cameras are always optional. Not that we would mind seeing your pretty face.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. God, it is already like 8 minutes till 7. So
that time
went really fast. I do want to kind of get ready to wrap up, but you know, maybe just do a quick.
Well, slow down the time. Is that what you said in the background there? Yeah, I'm also astonished how fast that went. That's always a good sign. Thank you for doing this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, maybe next time we'll just have to skip pre-show and give ourselves the extra half hour. I needed a little bit of a buffer tonight just because I was getting home a little bit later than usual. So I had to kind of scramble things together real quick. Next time we'll have to just start at 5 and skip the pre-show. Although it was really good music tonight. I mean, I think. Ride of the Valkyries much?
Yeah, it was. I came in about halfway through your pre-show, I think.
Yeah.
One point from me, the one thing that gets me pissed off is when like the feminists try to use the Valkyries as evidence that women were soldiers and stuff like that in ancient times. This is complete baloney.
Yes.
You need to understand the difference between a goddess and a woman or a supernatural being and a woman. You know, it's complete garbage.
They were technically psychopomps, so they actually fulfilled the same role and function as Charon, the ferryman of the River Styx, basically. You know,
I knew you would have a good explanation of it.
They escorted the souls of those gloriously slain in battle. Like there were very specific conditions. But I won't. Like I could go on about that for a straight hour, so I'm not going to start.
That's another stream.
These streams, I think it's wonderful. I love it.
Anyone that comes into my Ash and Aether streams knows I will randomly just go off about Valhalla is not heaven. Stop saying that everybody knows Valhalla.
Okay.
It's very upsetting to me. All right. So why don't we wrap up with a round of final thoughts from everybody. Monica, final thoughts and also just shout out your websites and everything. All right.
Okay. Final thoughts would be that the feminist agenda and the feminism thing that happened to us is probably one of the largest and most damaging social transformations that took place in a very short amount of time. And it was, of course, pushed by the usual suspects, the Jews, organized Jewry, the international Jew, how, like Henry Ford would call them, however you want to call them. They are proud of their role in these movements, like the feminist movement. And then the counter to that would be what I'm learning in this book by Gertrude, Scholz-Klink, Die Frau im Dritten Reich, so the woman in the Third Reich, and how she speaks about what was going on with women during the Third Reich and during the National Socialist era. And it's wonderful. People could, you know, delve into that and just, yeah. So that would be on the subject matter that we talk about. And then you wanted us to just do a little thing, promo, I guess, website.
Promote yourself. Promote the hell out of yourself.
Okay, so freespeechmonica.com. I mentioned it earlier. And that's Monica with a K. And the other one that I'm very proud of is the truthandjusticeforgermans.com. So all one word written out, truthandjusticeforgermans.com. And actually, there's the logo right there.
I love that logo.
So anyway, then I happen to write a book that is the same title as that video that changed my life, and it's called Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, and you can get that from the Barnes Review, so the barnesreview.org. And just basically the story of my experiences of what happened to me after I woke up and had a little time in the chicken shack, as Frederick likes to call it, BB9. Anyway, Blackbird 9 likes to call it the chicken shack, where Alfred, my brother, is currently. And every once in a while, I make an appearance on FTJ Media and just different things like this. You can find me if you put my name in on Gab, even Facebook. Odyssey, I have an Odyssey channel, so just stuff like that. But I'm not very active on those places. But the two websites and then the book, that would be it.
Nice.
And my show. I shouldn't forget my show. I do have my own weekly show on Republic Broadcasting Network. How could I forget? That's a weekly thing that I do. It's a 1-hour show, and it's called The Flip Side with Monica. It's every Saturday, and that the Republic Broadcasting Network is at republicbroadcasting.org. Nice. So if you don't set that in exactly, boy, you get a lot of pages of other things if you just put in Republic Broadcasting Network. Like,
yeah, you got to be real careful.
Anyways. Awesome.
So everybody go follow Monica everywhere. Kermie put some of your links right in the chats for us. So,
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, Froggy Friend. All right. Huntress, final thoughts, and if there's anything you want to shout out.
Oh, I think we covered it pretty good. We're probably still about a month out before we'll be set up for streaming. As we learned today, our room is too live for the audio, but we'll get Spy on that. And I'm so busy with painting and just getting the house set up that I haven't even begun to work on the material for our streams. But Spy will be doing the Digital Battlefront weekly. Nice. And once a month I will be doing a show covering Bronze Age charioteers, life in an antebellum house, art history segment, and something fun on cooking or sewing or something like that. It'll be like a four-part segments for the show. So I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. And I definitely want to have you ladies on because you each mentioned things that are relevant to what we're talking about. It sounds like Tess is very into American history, and Spy wants to do more on American history, particularly the Revolution and the Civil War. And then, of course, non-kosher salt, you and I are like kindred spirits with ancient history. So we would have a blast. And Monica, of course, with you are a pillar in this community. And with your music, I'd love to get you together with Spy.
That would be
fantastic. Yeah, he wants to talk more about music, too. So, yeah, but like I say, it's been hurry up and wait for months now with this whole moving process.
Yeah.
But we're here, and it's fantastic. And you would not believe how many IRL discussions we've had about Jews, Hitler, and of course, Dixie. And that have gone just amazingly well. People are very receptive. Yeah. We are living in a new world in 2026, especially now with this stupid war.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, that's what we're up to. And thank you so much for having me on. We'll try to have things set up a little better for next time.
No worry. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know, I don't remember if you saw any of my earliest streams from the early days. Trust me, you're far and away ahead of where I was. Oh my God. But no, I'm so happy you were able to come on tonight. I really appreciate having you. Miss Teresa, Sister Teresa, any final thoughts you want to get out there? Anything you want to promote, like your YouTube channel? We're still trying to get you to 50 subscribers so you can stream on there.
Yeah, I have a FTJ Pro.
Oh, you got the Pro account now?
Yeah, but I don't know what I'm doing. And we're also in the process of trying to move to the homestead.
Gotcha. You got a lot going on.
Homestead. And but my final thought would be that I said this in probably it was when I had my first child in 1997. I said to my mother-in-law, who was a bleeding heart feminist, rest her soul, I said, listen, women's lib didn't liberate women. It liberated the men and the bull dykes. That's who it liberated.
Yes.
So that's all I can say about that. Yeah, I have at Tess Sakai, A, or at TESSAKAI is my YouTube, and as my real name, dox me, I dox myself, Teresa Walsh. On FTJ, but no capability yet to stream. My goal would be like permaculture and gardening. And
that would be fantastic.
Ooh.
We'll have you start covering the Hail Victory garden content.
The Hail Victory.
Hail
Victory.
Hail. You know. I tend to like put everything into the American pronunciation because it's easier, and then I don't sound quite like an idiot.
No, not happening at all.
So yeah, I can we can get you up to speed on the streaming.
And we need to talk about Dixie. This is
yes.
The book. This is the book, girl. Defending Dixie's Land.
Oh, nice.
Yep. This guy had to write this book under a pseudonym.
And what is the pseudonym?
Isaac C. Bishop.
Okay.
This guy gives more content here about the lies about the war, the war between the states, the war of northern aggression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Hey, can we call it Jewish northern aggression? Because some of us are northerners and we were not behind that shit.
They were absolutely Jewish bankers.
I promise. Oh, ladies, this has been absolutely fantastic. Let's give a shout out to our chats real quick here. Over on 88 hanging out with us, we had Arian Eagle, Kermie, Mrs. Catfish jumping in.
The Barnes Review for the love of Dixie.
Ah, you got one too. That's great. Who else did we have?
But I lost your sound again. I don't hear anything. Do you hear me?
I hear you.
Oh, I can't
everyone
hear you.
Else hear me? It's the Jews.
I could try to lip read.
It's always the Jews.
What happened? I don't know.
Yeah, I just we got Jews chewing the wires again.
Oh, you know what? I got you again. I pushed on this. I think maybe I have a loose connection.
Okay. Loose wires.
See, maybe that was it all along.
It's little Jew gremlins. They sneak in and they chew on your wires.
I know. Yeah.
That's why you crazy. Have to lay salt around, but you know, non-kosher salt. Ah.
That's good.
All right. So good to have everybody over in FTJ. Mrs. Catfish, welcome. Good to see you. And then over here on 88, I'm sorry, that was on 88. Now we're going to FTJ. I'm being like dyslexic today. We had Thomas E. Dwyer, Drosselot, The Woodsman, Filthy, Riot Earth, Uncle Stevel, Ethno-Nationalist, Kermie, Aryan Eagle, and Vocational Science of Freedom. I also had, I don't know why he's not showing up in that little side scroll, because we also had Straight Outta Swampton, a Pac-Man 40 jumped in, Unobtrusive. Check out Crewbot when you guys are on the go. It like takes no battery off your phone, and you can listen to all your favorite streams when you're driving around in your car, and then, you know, go into the house and get on the computer and join the chat. It's fantastic. Spy Hunter. I'm trying to make sure I cover everybody. There's a lot of you guys, which is awesome. There's all sorts of awesome. I think I had everybody. Again, if I miss you, I'm sorry. Bad salty, no cookie. So, but yeah, you guys have been absolutely incredible. I did want to do this one last thing. Unobtrusive dropped us a donation and said, thank you for your great content. Well, absolutely. Thank you, ladies, because we wouldn't have this content without you ladies joining me, which I greatly appreciate it. And I hope you all know how much I appreciate you. This has been such a blessing to me to find other women, you know, that I can actually talk to without having to edit myself all the time, filter myself all the time. It's very good. Kermie also just dropped a dono and says, wonderful panel. So, oh, by the way, Kermie was voting for you, Monica, as like the ideal Natsok woman earlier. I remember that. So just aww. So you know.
Yes.
Absolutely. Hundo P. 100%. So, all right, guys, in the chat, thank you so much for hanging out. I'm going to get some music going in just a moment for our play out. Don't forget to check out all the other streamers and content creators on FTJ, on 88 Streams. There's also people all over the place in other sites, like Fashbird's, like, absolutely insane library on BitChute alone is amazing. She's got her Substack. I got to shout out Fashbird. She can't be with us tonight, but I got to shout her out. I love Fashbird.
Yeah, she's a wealth of, like, she calls herself the archivist, and it's just a wealth of good stuff that she's putting out.
So, yeah, it's there's lots of good stuff. We don't have to rely on the Jew media for that's entertainment. Right. You know, learning things is entertaining. That's what I always like to say anyway. So, oops.
Thank you so much for doing this, and thank you for absolutely. You know, your work and putting the stream together, all that. It's wonderful. Thank you.
I like to say my big skill is, like, I can talk a lot and I can ask questions. So. but no, it's fantastic to have you all here. And you all have a standing invite anytime. So anytime, like, we're gearing up for our White Power Women's Hour, you're all invited indefinitely. Uncle Steve will just drop the dono. Thank you for your great content. Absolutely. I got to find the song. There it is. Okay, so I found the song. Let me share my screen. And play us all out. Remember to turn my mic off. No more.
Up the hill, blows a hell in olden ways. So, go to right, be done, it waiting for longer days.